listening to an episode of the Dynasty Draft Room podcast, brought to you by DynastyDraftRoom.com.
SEC is back, and so am I. My name is Matt Hicks, the FF underscore educator, and this is the Devy Seminar. It is a great day to talk Devy fantasy football. For those of you who follow me on Twitter or Patreon, you know I was out of town this weekend. First time I've traveled in a while, headed back to see family. It was fantastic. However, it was also during the first weekend of SEC football, so I was able to catch some of the games here and then getting caught up with the rest of them. So not every game I'm talking about today I was able to actually go in and see in detail, but everything that I'm going to talk about I've at least gathered, put together information on, watched parts of games that I was able to collect here in just the few hours that I've been back. What we're going to talk about today is our top five takeaways from the return of SEC play, specifically in terms of some Devy stocks moving up and down. We're going to start here with the new coaches making a quick impact in the SEC West. We're talking Mississippi State, and we're talking about Ole Miss. Now, obviously, Mississippi State is the team that stole the weekend here. Mike Leach in the air raid offense march on down to Baton Rouge, and they walk away with an upset victory, 44-34, against the defending national champion LSU Tigers, returning, I believe, six starters from that LSU national championship team last year. And I believe that does not include that six number does not include Derek Stingley, who is not able to play. So LSU is not 100%. They don't have the same level of experience. It's not the same team, but nonetheless, KJ Costello comes out, throws the ball 60 times. Now he's going to throw the ball 60 times, and that's going to show us that Mike Leach does not care where he is playing. He is going to implement his offense, and he does. KJ Costello completes 60% of those passes for 623 yards, an SEC record. Single game passing yards, 5 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Now, instantly, what I'm going to tell you about KJ Costello is the same thing that I've been tweeting all summer and telling you. Mike Leach's air raid offense is going to hide a lot of KJ Costello's flaws. Now, I did not get to see this whole game. I saw parts of this game. So I got to go back, I got to watch the tape, and I got to tell you if I really liked what I saw from KJ Costello, but I've been telling you this all along. It's going to look nice. Whether he puts together good tape or bad tape, KJ Costello, his flaws are hidden in Mike Leach's offense. Now, what I did like that I saw was Kylan Hill getting involved in the passing game. That was a big knock that we saw, that we heard about Kylan Hill. It's a common mistake. Just because a player is not used in the passing game does not mean he can't contribute to the passing game. Jonathan Taylor, hello, perfect example, right up in your face. We saw what Indianapolis has done with him early because they've had to. Now, Wisconsin never had to use Jonathan Taylor in the passing game. And previously, although Kylan Hill has been a dominant force in between the tackles, a very consistent running back from Mississippi State, he's never had to be used in between, or I should say he has never had to be used in the passing game. But he comes out 8 for 158. He's got that one big play where he shows off some good contact balance. He physically leaves his feet, makes a nice catch that he has to extend on. It was an off-target pass by KJ Costello. Turns that into a big play. He finds the end zone in this game. 8 receptions, 158 yards, and a touchdown to go along with 7 attempts and just 34 yards in between the tackles. Now, it was interesting here. We got a little bit of action from Joquavius Marks, who was somebody that I was definitely interested in going into this game. I get a little bit of action from him, just three attempts, only used one time in the receiving game, so I'm hoping to see more from him, but he's the only other running back used in this game for Mississippi State. Tyrell Shavers finds the end zone. Remember, Tyrell Shavers, the Alabama transfer that I suggested you pick up in your Campus to Canton leagues or even your Deep Devi leagues, 2 for 68 and a touchdown. So we saw some early involvement from him as well. Now, there were other Mississippi State wide receivers that were more involved in this game, including Osiris Mitchell, including Javonta Payton. But nonetheless, the big takeaway here is that there's going to be a lot of action here on the offensive side of the ball for the Mississippi State offense. Pay attention to what the players are doing, not necessarily the stats they're putting up. So this is a game I've only caught bits and pieces on. I got to go back. I got to find the full tape on this game. But right off the bat, right, Mississippi State, it's an eye catcher. It's an impact performance right off the bat. And now, Lane Kiffin, not quite as successful here with Ole Miss. But I got to tell you, 35 points against the Florida defense. Now, I know it's week one. Limited practice here, right? Limited practice. It's going to hurt the defense more than anybody. Hanging 35 on Florida's defense, that, your first day as an SEC, as a new coach in the SEC, I should say. Nothing to shake your head at here. Now, I only saw the full first quarter here of the Ole Miss-Florida game, but I thought Ole Miss looked better than the 14-7 score that was done at the end of the first quarter. The final score, of course, 51-35, but I liked what I saw from Ole Miss, and I'm not just talking about those nice blue jerseys that they were rocking. I think they should rock those week in and week out. They were making, I mean, they had Emory Jones throw up that ridiculous pass. They were able to bat it down. They were bringing pressure on defense. It's not normally something that they're super fantastic with. We saw Matt Corral, not John Rhys Plumlee, being the quarterback for a minute. He came out, he performed well, 22 for 31 here, 395 yards and 3 touchdowns with the 1 interception against the Florida Gators defense. We like seeing that. I had suggested that it was still Matt Corral's job to lose, even if John Rhys Plumlee did perform well at the end of last year. It looks like at least early on it's Corral's job, and he did nothing in week one to suggest that it won't be his job moving forward. So we're going to talk a little bit about Jerrion Ealy here in a little bit, so I'm not going to dig into his game yet. But I got to say, overall, for both Lane Kiffin and Mike Leach, different approaches, different results. But I think from a Devi perspective, you have to start being encouraged with the way they're going to use their offensive weapons and what it can mean for some of the draft stock here of these guys. The second takeaway, I want to talk about a core group of guys where whenever we talk about the SEC, we're going to be talking about these core group of guys here for the next couple years. That is the sophomore running backs, the 2022 eligible running backs. I'm talking Jerrion Ealy, Isaiah Spiller, John Emery, and Eric Gray. We're already talking about Ole Miss, so why don't we talk about Jerrion Ealy, who does get good usage in this game. Not only in the running game, 16 for 79, he also catches 3 balls for 44 yards, over 100 yards total. He finds the end zone on the ground here, and it's clearly his backfield. Even if you include the quarterback rushes, it's about a 50% split here with the rushing game for Jerrion Ealy. So you have to really like, I should say if you don't include the quarterbacks, I'm sorry, Matt Corral ran the ball 13 times as well. He got it done on the ground as well as through the air, those stats that I mentioned earlier. So you have to be encouraged with what you're seeing right out of the box here with CJ Spiller. Now, I mentioned I haven't gotten to watch every game. I got none of the Texas A&M game. So I'm not going to give in-depth review here on CJ Spiller. What I will say, however, is that if your argument against CJ Spiller is that he can't perform against SEC opponents, 8 for 117, averaged 15 yards. However, you might also suggest that he was playing Vanderbilt, which is about as far away from the SEC as you can get inside the SEC. And he actually did get out-touched on the ground by Smith, who ran for 10 for 51 yards. So not anywhere near as efficient. He did get the touchdown. Again, I did not watch the tape. I want to go back. I want to find the cut-ups there of those 8 Isaiah Spiller runs, get my hands on some A22 and really see, you know, what's going on there with Isaiah Spiller. John Emery, the box score did not look as good for him. Again, I caught actually just the end, the last about most of the second half there with the LSU game. You know, a couple flashes there, but nothing really impressive with John Emery Jr. 7 for 27, 3 receptions, 25 yards. Now, I'm still not panicking on my Devy shares of John Emery Jr., but, you know, it's starting to add up, folks. It's, you know, we think he's going to win the job last year. He ends up not getting super involved. However, you know, what I'm going to say is Davis Prince, he out-touched him, but was it that much better? No, not necessarily. Chris Curry got some touches on the ground. Not super impressive either, so, you know, when we're looking at guys being involved in the passing game, you like to see that Emery Jr. is going to be involved. This LSU offense is clearly still finding its identity, so I'm not going to freak out yet. You know, if you want to buy low on John Emery Jr., if there are folks that are freaking out on this LSU offense, we knew it wasn't going to be Joe Brady's offense. It's going to take some time for them to get their identity. The guy who I did get to see, I saw every snap for Eric Gray. You better believe I was running all around this last weekend, you know, catching games on Saturday where I could. You better believe I made sure my butt was planted in front of the laptop there to catch the Tennessee game in Columbia. It didn't look fantastic early for the Vols, but they got the job done, and Eric Gray was a key part of that. Now, just 12 for 40 on the ground, which doesn't sound super fantastic. If you're watching the game, they actually were really working in Ty Chandler, who's a guy, I gotta be honest, I have Ty Chandler just left over on a few Devy rosters because I thought he was going to be more of an impact player last year, and I couldn't get rid of him. You know, nobody wanted him, so I kind of just have him left over. Well, he went 13 for 86 in the 13 that he put down. I mean, he was looking like a good, efficient running back. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that I think he's going to translate to an NFL running back at this point in time, but he was clearly a part of the Vols' game plan, and he looked good when he got the ball. Now, Eric Gray got caught behind the line of scrimmage at times, but there were other times where he looked really explosive. I tweeted out the one clip at the goal line. He barrels through two guys, barely gets knocked off balance, finds the end zone. He had the one catch there where he was wide open. It was a broken play. He stays in the flat. Jared Garantano somehow figures out how to pretty much shovel the ball off to him. And he catches it, and he's in wide open space. Now, I got to say, at the very end of that play, Gray had a one-on-one where he could have found the end zone again. He probably should have beat that guy in open space. So although there were examples of him being explosive, I would have liked to see him beat that guy in open space for the touchdown, and I would have liked to see him not get caught behind the line of scrimmage as often. Eric Gray has a good offensive line to work with, especially in pass pro. I was impressed with that offensive line overall. But even in the run game, I'm impressed with what we're seeing from the Tennessee offensive line. It's the most complete, it's the most encouraging unit that we've seen it in a while from them. So that's kind of the roundup here on the sophomore running backs. That's the second takeaway from this weekend. The third takeaway, this one's going to be short and sweet. It's that Jalen Waddle can absolutely be the first wide receiver off the board in the 2021 NFL Draft. This is not a new takeaway. I'm just really quadrupling down, tripling down, whatever you want to call it, on a take that I've been throwing out there a ton. My goodness, Jalen Waddle, 8 for 134 and 2 touchdowns in the way that he was catching those balls, going up and getting them. You know, I love this because I feel like folks are just sitting back and waiting to make the lazy Henry Ruggs arguments again. Oh, he's just fast. All right, we've already seen Jalen Waddle put up some plays where he goes up and gets the ball. He's got sticky hands, man. He's doing it in a lot of different ways. And I got to tell you, Devonta Smith, he's not far behind. He's not far behind, but Jalen Waddle stole the show with some big catches, 2 touchdowns. Hey, John Mechie, I told you, was going to be the third wide receiver up. And I could be wrong, but at least early on, he was involved. 2 receptions, 42 yards here. Now, Alabama was shredding a bad Missouri team. It's not a Mizzou team that anybody really expected to compete. This is an Alabama team that we did expect to compete. But there were question marks with how Mac Jones could specifically uphold, or I should say support, the Devy prospects on this team. And at least for week one, at least against a bad Mizzou team, we were encouraged, and I like what I saw. Now, UGA, another game that I did not get a ton of, and I got to tell you, I mostly caught the fourth quarter when Mathis was in there. Mostly was annoyed because it was hanging over a little bit into the pregame coverage of the Vols game. But I caught just a little bit at the end. Arkansas had already lost. But remember, this game was 5-7 going into the half. So, we, you know, there was a lack of efficiency from the Georgia offense. My big takeaway here, and it's honestly just as much of a takeaway as a news clip, is that JT Daniels is expected to be ready for next week, cleared medically, ready to go, ready to be the starter. And I think Georgia is just so ready for that. I think we're ready to open up this offense, let Pickens get a little bit more, you know, let Robertson be a part of this, see if he can play his way into being an NFL draft prospect. So that's it. That's the takeaway. Throw out what we saw from the receivers in week one and get ready to see it with a real pass, a real pocket passer, a guy who can command this offense. And I think that's probably the best way of saying it. Now, again, this is not a game I caught more than a quarter of. So I keep telling you that just because I don't want to suggest that I was in front. Most weeks I'm sitting there and I'm watching all 60 snaps from both teams. But I did not get the opportunity to do that this week, but I caught, you know, at least a quarter or a half for most of these games. I caught the last quarter for Georgia-Arkansas, which is not the most useful quarter to catch. But, you know, even I could see clearly that they were ready for JT Daniels, and JT Daniels is now cleared, so it's going to be a good situation there for UGA. It's going to be a good situation here if you just have Devy prospects on the Georgia offense overall. Last takeaway, and we're going to go back to the Vols game because, again, this was the one I was able to be the most in-depth on, and I want to take you beyond the box score, all right? Because although we're talking a lot of stats today, it's not something I normally like doing. I'm going to give a good example about how digging past the stats can be really beneficial for you. Now, we're looking at the Tennessee offense, and just mentioned the pass pro is there. It's much better than it has been in years. By the way, the defense was really good as well. It kept the offense on the field a lot. It allowed the Vols to throw the ball 31 times. That's more than they're used to throwing the ball. Now, Jared Garantano did not look good. All right? He looked fine at times. He didn't turn the ball over, which is huge. If you've been following the career projection of Jared Garantano, him not turning the ball over is huge. But he was consistently missing guys off target. He was missing them high. It was infuriating to watch throughout the game because it was the same thing. It was the same technical error in his passing motion all game. And he acknowledged that after the game, he was aware of it. But now can he go back and make the correction? That's the question. But that wasn't my main point here. My main point is to look at who was getting targeted in this game. Josh Palmer, all right, his last year with the Vols. Valus Jones Jr., the USC transfer that came over with T. Martin. Now, he looked good. They wanted to utilize him. He's a graduate transfer. Brandon Johnson, he's the redshirt senior. He had this weird year. He should have played his final year last year, but he redshirted as a senior in order to be a more prominent part of the offense when they knew they weren't going to have a lot of wide receiver depth. He did good too, 3 for 73. Now, none of those guys should really be at the top of your Devy radars, but there's been a lot of discussion as to which young Tennessee Vols wide receiver was going to be incorporated. And at least early, Ramel Keaton seems to be the guy that they're interested in. 6'3", 195. He's a redshirt sophomore. I'm sorry, a redshirt freshman. He played just 4 games in his freshman year, caught 104 balls. So I believe he carried over that redshirt designation. You know, he's 6'3", 195. I got to tell you, when he's out there catching balls, he looked like he should be 6'5", 210. He plays bigger than that 6'3", 195. He only had 2 receptions for 20 yards, and that's why I'm telling you sometimes you got to look beyond the box score. He had a wide open situation, 40 yards downfield. He had worked himself wide open. Jared Garantano misses him high on the sidelines. You could easily add 40 yards to his box score right there. Now, he had some other opportunities where he was targeted and either he missed or Garantano missed. I'm not saying it was all Garantano, but Ramel Keaton was clearly a main focal part. It was an effort to give him targets, and although he only walked away with two receptions, he had a lot more targets, he had a lot more opportunities. So if I'm making any quick reactions from week one, it's Ramel Keaton. It's go and buy Ramel Keaton because it's not going to show up well on the box score. And most folks in your league probably are not like me. They probably were not so excited for the Tennessee-South Carolina game at the very end of Saturday on the SEC Network when there were probably other primetime non-SEC games to watch that they weren't honed in on Ramel Keaton. And even if they were honed in on that game, they probably just saw him getting missed. But I'm telling you, he plays bigger than that 6'3", which is encouraging. He was clearly a focal part of the offense, and he's young. And that offense is going to skyrocket whenever Harrison Bailey gets to be at the helm of the offense. If I didn't have Ramel Keaton just about everywhere, I'd be looking to buy him just about everywhere right now. All right, that's our show for this week. That's the Devy seminar for this week. It's the five takeaways from the SEC being back. I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to be back on the grind. I'm going to dig into all of these games. Going to catch all of the A22, all of the clips, all of the everything that I can get here over the next week and get ready for week four of the college football season. All right. We are knee-deep in Dynasty right now. I'm overwhelmed by Dynasty right now, too. I know you are. And I know you're overwhelmed on your Dynasty, your pro side, your campus at the Canton Leagues as well. But this is when we find value. Don't be afraid to get those trades out there. All right? Don't be afraid to hit me up with questions on Twitter, @theff_educator. Now, I have posted a couple times over the last couple weeks. My inboxes are flooded. I will try to get to your questions if I can. You know, the tags, I see them. I get to them if I can. The inboxes are flooded if I can. The priority, it always goes to the patrons. The priority is the patrons. And you can get in on the Patreon, you know, from $1 to $9. I try to make it accessible. I try to make it affordable for anybody to be a part of it. Just $1 gets you priority advice in the extra Devy podcast, Devy Dynasty podcast per week. Patreon.com/TheFFEducator. Also on Twitter, @TheFF_educator. So if you want to hit me up on either of those mediums, I will do my best to get back to you, give you insight and advice, but the Patreon guarantees it. We will be back this week with a Dynasty and an NFL draft show as well. We appreciate you tuning in. If you have not subscribed already, please. Go ahead, hit that subscribe button, leave us a rate and review. We would really appreciate it. It really helps get our name out there. We're grinding. We're grinding for you. We're grinding to get you some good roster construction, some good Devy players, and to get some W's, whether that be in our Campus to Canton leagues, our Devy leagues, or I should say our college fantasy football leagues. We're getting you W's in all the leagues. Let's go ahead and do it together.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dynasty Draft Room Podcast. Please make sure to go ahead and subscribe. Leave us a 5-star rate and review. And tell a friend. Until next time on the Dynasty Draft Room Podcast.